Welcome back. It's time for another OC Spotlight. The one show where we take a look at the most incredible people doing the most amazing things. And today, well, this is a serious one here today. We do a lot of fun things here, but this is a community alert, a community show that we hope a lot of people will tune into, because we've got somebody special to talk about the one topic on everybody's mind, coronavirus. Yes, folks, you know it. We're all worried about it. We're all wondering about it. Today, we brought somebody in who's been doing lots of talks all over the county on this, Dr. Trinh. Hey, Dr. Trinh, how are you?
Hey, Paul. I'm good. Thank you.
Give us some background on who Dr. Trinh is. Give us some of your without reading the whole CV here, it'd take us the rest of the show to cover all your connections and qualifications. But give us a quick summary of who Dr. Trinh is.
Hey, thanks so much. Quick summary. I guess I'm a physician.
There you go.
I practice here in Orange County. I wear a whole bunch of hats, as you know, Paul.
Yeah.
My first hat is really as a medical missionary with a nonprofit organization called Tongue Out.
Mm-hmm. And Tongue Out. I love that.
Out. Yes.
And what does that do? What do you do with Tongue Out?
I take doctors, nurses, lots of high schoolers and college students to third world countries, such as Vietnam, Haiti, Peru, Oaxaca, Mexico. And our mission is really to be the hands and feet of and to serve those who need it most in third world countries.
So much need to know. What's the other one? Doctors Without Borders. I know they go all over the world here, too. There's other groups like that. And such good work where they come into these places. People haven't seen a doctor in maybe forever.
Right.
Certainly in a long time, and you get them to say, stick your tongue out, and let's see what we can figure out or find here.
That's right.
So beyond that, you're also on the board of Alzheimer's here in Orange County.
I'm with Alzheimer's Orange County. I'm a physician with Memorial Care. I'm with an organization called Irvine Clinical Research, where we focus a lot on clinical trials, clinical research with Alzheimer's work. And brain health type topics.
Well, and you've been on this show. You also have a practice in like Laguna Woods or someplace like that.
Many of my patients are in Laguna Woods. I had a practice, but I've kind of evolved now into preventive health education, public speaking to large groups, because I've realized that through the 17 years or so of taking care of patients. Yes, I could educate one patient each 15 minutes.
Yeah, right.
Right, and educate four patients in an hour. Or I can spend that hour and speak to a group of 100 patients and teach them about preventive health and wellness.
Well, Ned, you're on a mission, as you said, to spread the gospel and tell people about how to live a healthier life and to answer all the fears and concerns and questions we have more and more about health and issues and health emergencies like the one we're facing here. So all of that is why the clinical work, the hospital work, the missionary work, all of that's why we brought you in here today to see if you can shed some light on what seems like a very confusing, frightening subject for most of us here in Orange County and across the country, coronavirus. Let's start with what is coronavirus?
Yes. So in everyone's mind is this question, is coronavirus, you know, like the flu? And
many politicians have been saying, hey, it's no worse than flu. It's just like the flu.
Right. Is it just a bad flu?
Right.
Or is it something more worrisome than just the flu?
Right.
So let's just talk about the facts, what we currently know. So this novel coronavirus, and they call it COVID-19. All that means is that it's short for coronavirus, discovered in 2019.
That's what I heard.
That means,
right. Disease, right?
That's right. So when I talk about coronavirus, that's what I'm talking about.
And somebody was in the other day, and see if this is correct, they said that this is actually the seventh coronavirus that's come along. This is the seventh strain of it here that they've discovered, and some of the ones were scary beforehand. That's partly why this one's scary. It wasn't SARS. yes. A coronavirus.
SARS is a coronavirus. SARS was back in 2003.
That was kind of like the bird flu, they called it, or something.
Yes,
I think.
Yes. And then we had what's called MERS. MERS stands for Middle East Respiratory Syndrome. Mm-hmm. And that's also a coronavirus. Mm-hmm. And there are other coronaviruses that didn't make the news because the outbreaks weren't as bad. Mm-hmm. And so this coronavirus, this family of coronavirus.
It's not an influenza. That's a different strain of something.
It's a different strain. So coronavirus is a family of viruses that normally do not live among humans.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
Right? They're
animal
hang
based.
Out with wild animals, mm-hmm. like bats and rats and wild animals. And so mm-hmm. there's this theory that this came out of Wuhan, China, mm-hmm. right? Wuhan City. And indeed, this is where it originated. And
somehow it made the leap to, because most viruses do not transmit from animals to humans, but occasionally yes. they do. And when they do, they're usually bad because we have no resistance to them whatsoever.
Exactly. 100%. It made the leap. If you were to study the structure of the coronavirus that infects humans mm-hmm. and study the coronavirus that is currently living in bats and rats, mm-hmm. they overlap in their DNA genome by about 85%.
Mm, wow.
What that means is that there's a 15% difference. And somewhere in that 50% difference is what made the leap mm-hmm. over to humans. Mm-hmm. And so this is completely new to our immune system, right?
And that seems to be the fear. One, that it's new. Two, that it comes from a type of virus, a coronavirus that we know has been had some deadly results in past instances, maybe I'm overstating that, but it's deadlier than the flu, right? The death rate is higher than what's the normal death rate of a flu? We've talked a lot about. Geez, I think they literally said 70,000 people in America died from the flu.
Yes, let's talk about this flu season.
Okay,
this flu season has infected around 30 million Americans.
Wow. Okay.
Right? Or around 30 million Americans.
Okay. One out of 10, millions. Something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, one out of 10. Right. Right? And of that, I believe around 340,000 or 350,000 patients mm-hmm. of that 30-something million mm-hmm. required hospitalization.
Okay.
So if you take out your calculator
mm-hmm.
and
I'm trying to do it in my head here, right?
You put it in your head, right? What is the percentage of hospitalization?
I think it's like 0.1 or something.
It's 1%.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
So if you catch the flu for this flu season, the percentage of hospitalizations 1%.
Okay. And of that 1%, I hate to ask, but how many die?
Of that 1%, right?
Mm-hmm.
The death rate of the flu is this, for this flu season. If you have 1,000 patients infected with the flu,
right,
one will die.
Wow. Okay.
One in 1,000.
One in 1,000. Okay.
So, you know, one is way too many, but
right.
still, right, one in 1,000. So, which is why, you know, if you think coronavirus is like the flu, you're not as worried,
right?
If you think that.
Right.
So, let's look at what we know about coronavirus.
Right. And this is still evolving because we don't have enough data in. 6 months from now, they'll have a better picture of how many people were infected and what the infection rate was and
exactly.
required hospitalization and how many of those died. Right.
Exactly. So this is March 12th stuff, right?
Right.
2020.
Right.
This is what we know
at this moment.
At this point, March 12th, right? 2020. It may change in a week, but I'll tell you what we know now. What we know now is that the death rate is all over the place depending on the country.
Mm.
Depending on the country.
And that may be lifestyle. Somebody was saying that it's higher in Italy because maybe they smoke more in Italy or other sorts of things.
So we can't really pinpoint an exact number. Mm-hmm. In Wuhan, the death rate is close to 5%.
Wow. That's higher than I've heard. I've heard of 3 bantied about
right.
a lot.
In Wuhan. Right. So what the World Health Organization did is they took an average,
mm-hmm.
right, of all the different countries, all the different death rates, and that average a few days ago was 3.4%.
Mm-hmm.
What that means is if you have 100 patients infected mm-hmm. with this coronavirus, 3.4 will die out of 100. Mm-hmm. But that is an average. It is different depending on country.
Mm-hmm. And the other, just to be fair, factor I've heard bantied about is that's based on the number of cases they know and then tracking how many get sick and how many die.
That's 100% true.
If suddenly they find out, hey, there's a heck of a lot more people that have this that just didn't have enough symptoms to go to the doctor or didn't get diagnosed with it properly.
That is 100% true.
It might reduce the rate.
Yeah. So let's look at the country that has done the most testing so far.
Okay, which is what, Korea?
Korea, because right. they have, if you've done the most testing, you probably have the best data,
right.
the most accurate data. So Korea has been testing 10,000 plus patients a day.
A day. And we haven't done 10,000 in the whole country.
In the whole country, we haven't even done 10,000, right? So Korea, I think, has the best data. The death rate in Korea is, I believe, around 0.6%.
Less than 1%. Right.
Which is good.
Right.
Right. Less than 1%, which is good. I would take that, right? The lower, the better.
Right. That's more like the flu.
Yeah. Right. That's more like the flu. It's semi more like the flu. It's mm-hmm. semi more like the flu because what we know now is that according to the physicians who's head of the NIH or the National Institute of Infectious Disease.
Yes, right. That guy's been Dr. Froomey or something. Yeah.
He came out yesterday and what he said was this. He said that the flu virus compared to the coronavirus is 10 times deadlier.
Wow.
Coronavirus is 10 times deadlier okay. than the seasonal flu.
Okay.
So I don't see how you can compare the flu to the coronavirus when the coronavirus is 10 times deadlier.
Right.
Right, and that's according to...
And the other factor is, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but the flu, even though it evolves and changes every year slightly, they have to come out with new shots for the flu because there's new strains of it. That's why they can't kill the flu. It evolves, it mutates all the time here like the common cold does here. But we have some resistance built up to this.
We
know the flu.
The flu has lived with us for thousands of years.
We're a group of Native American, we're a Native tribe here that's been isolated away from these other diseases. You know, when in the 1500s and 1600s, we started interacting with people all over the world, and they'd land on some island, and they'd get decimated by diarrhea or smallpox or something, or chicken pox, something we thought was minimal that we'd learned to handle, but they'd never had that in their system.
Yes.
So here we've got something new in our system that normally doesn't...
Our immune system doesn't know how to defend itself because it's so new.
Right.
Now, I can tell you how these two viruses are similar.
Mm-hmm.
They have similar symptoms.
Yeah.
Flu-like symptoms.
They do, yeah.
So that's why it's hard to differentiate the three top symptoms of the coronavirus: fever,
mm-hmm.
cough, shortness of breath.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the three top symptoms.
So if you're experiencing any of those, folks, don't just blow it off and say, I got the flu again here. Go find out if you got this other thing instead.
Right, so they overlap. It's flu-like symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why.
But where they diverge is the flu doesn't usually turn into pneumonia. It doesn't go from your head, your nose, from your upper area. It goes down into your chest, and that's when it turns into some sort of pneumonia.
There's two divergences, right? And when we're looking at numbers, the first divergence is that coronavirus is 10 times deadlier.
Mm-hmm.
The second divergence is hospitalization rates.
Mm.
Right? We looked at the flu numbers, and it's about a 1% hospitalization rate,
mm-hmm.
right? 300-something thousand.
Yeah, you don't think
patients.
Of most people, if you get the flu, you don't have to go to the hospital. It might be miserable, but you can ride it out at home.
That's correct. You ride it out at home for most of us. You know, water, fluids, rest, and things of that sort.
Right.
With coronavirus, the hospitalization rate is 15 to 20%.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
Look at those numbers difference. 15 to 20% versus 1%.
Right. So one of the things you've been pointing out, and we talked about this before the show started, is maybe the crisis isn't just that it's deadlier. Maybe the crisis is that it's going to require more hospitalizations than we can handle.
100%. The crisis is that it's going to overwhelm our healthcare system, mm-hmm. simply because we don't have the beds.
I saw somebody last night on one of the Talking Head shows. I think it was the guy who previously ran Obama's Ebola response team. And he said something like, we have 1 million beds in the whole country. And so and we've heard estimates as high as 30, 40, 50% of Americans might get this. If it got anywhere near that, instead of 100 million Americans, let's say it was just 10 million Americans got this. You're saying 1 out of 10 or 1 million of them would require hospitalization. And we only have that many beds now, and they're not all empty.
Right.
So assuming that it got anywhere, even if only 10 million Americans got infected with this, if that percentage holds true and 1 out of 10 of them need to go to the hospital, what are we going to do?
Right. That's my biggest concern right now, is the lack of the potential lack of resources. We need to flatten out this curve.
Right. Which means what? Just to get it to slow down?
Yes. And to flatten out this curve is we need to think about.
Because the curve is otherwise 2 people get it, then 4 people get it, then 8 people get it, it starts doubling, tripling, or whatever.
Yeah. I believe we can flatten out the curve, mm-hmm. but that's going to require changes in our daily lifestyle.
Mm-hmm. Changes we may not like. We're already going through them right now.
It's going to require avoiding, you know, meetings of large groups of people. Mm-hmm. To avoid spreading this, it's going to require maybe doing church online, rather than going to church.
I'm a good Irish Catholic. Yeah, I was surprised just going into Mass a couple weeks ago here. The diocese wisely immediately said, because in a Catholic service, you typically shake hands at the beginning and you drink out of the same wine cup, all that stuff immediately stopped. But you're saying it may have to go further. We may not be able to assemble in Mass for a while, just like we're not going to assemble at NBA. They canceled the NBA season last night.
I know.
They're going to hold March Madness without any fans in the stands.
Right.
Coachella, for the first time in 35 years, said, not stay home.
Right. And those are, I believe, the appropriate things to do, mm-hmm. Because we need to essentially limit the spread.
Right.
Of disease.
Slow it down. So will we ever get to, I guess the fear is, the market's certainly afraid of this, that we're going to become like Italy had to go, 60 million people, everybody stay home unless it's absolutely essential that you don't. Shut down all the restaurants, shut down the stores except for pharmacies and something, you know, let's limit, which is devastating.
Well, devastating.
How do you, all these small businesses, the flower shop, the coffee shop, everybody's going to have to just board up and go home for a month here?
Very devastating.
Yeah.
Very devastating.
And if we do those severe things, the assumption is then that'll, as you say, flatten out the curve. Fewer people will come in contact with people that are affected.
That's
and it'll
correct.
Slow down the rate.
Slow down the
so
rate.
So that
of
we
rise.
Can get ahead of this,
yes.
and accommodate it as people are infected. It's
and half the hospital beds.
Right.
Right. If we have a swarm of folks who are all infected at once, the hospital beds are not there.
Well, you do. I know if it's at Memorial Care or someplace, but I know you still do emergency duty.
Yes,
sometimes.
Yes. I'll be on this weekend at the ER.
And you said already, just locally.
Beds are very rare.
Yeah.
We're already busy in the hospital as it is without coronavirus.
Right.
And so that's
so are
that's
we going to have to do what they did in China and build hospitals overnight? We can't do that.
We can build it in 10 days in China.
They did, literally.
Yeah.
Are we going to have emergency cots? Are we going to requisition hotels? They did that up in Seattle, I think. They took over an old hotel or motel.
I pray that day would not come, but we have to be prepared.
And then how about not just the hospitals? Do we have enough ventilators in the hospitals? Not just enough hospital beds?
Exactly.
Because
intubation machines.
Yes. If this goes into your lungs, then what do you do? What's the process at that point? Do they stick a ventilator
in? They stick a ventilator in you. They have to breathe for you.
Yeah.
If you're not breathing, if your nose is changing oxygen, it is quite scary. But at the same time, we do have hope. The number of cases in Wuhan is now decreasing.
Yes.
So we know that at some point, this will end.
It starts to burn itself out.
This will burn itself out. We just want to limit the damage.
Right.
Right, and minimize the damage.
And talk about one other thing that confuses me here. So let's say right now, as much as we know, and this could change over time, but it's 10 times deadlier than the flu. One out of 10 people will require hospitalization who get this, roughly. And of those people who go into a hospital, a certain number are going to die. But can we minimize that by getting them into a hospital quickly and having a ventilator, somebody breathe for you? Because it seems like some of the deaths they're saying in Wuhan and elsewhere could have been prevented, that maybe we can limit the deadliness of this if we can get people in and on a ventilator fast enough. Is that true, or am I overstating it?
In Wuhan, they were overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. Their resources were overwhelmed. Their hospitals were overwhelmed. So perhaps
there were people who died that didn't have to die.
Exactly, right. Exactly. Perhaps there were people who needed to be hospitalized, but there were no hospital beds.
Right, right.
And we need to prevent that here.
And that's the fear. Could you imagine if we knew we could handle this if on ventilators, but we just didn't have enough to go around? Then doctors would decide it's a triage on a battlefield.
Right.
He's got less chance than this one, so let's give him the ventilator and let's let Grandpa go here because we just don't have two ventilators right now.
Yeah, that's a nightmare scenario. I hope will never happen.
Yeah,
but we got to be prepared.
So anything else we can do to prepare at this moment, other than the trying not to panic and trying to the normal things, avoid
social distancing.
Yeah, keep some distance.
It's huge. If you don't need to go out, especially if you're in the, if you're older or if you got chronic medical conditions, right?
And older, starting at my age, they're saying I'm 64.
That's like the new 40s.
Yeah, right, exactly. You're saying if your immune system is weakened.
Right.
And how do you know that? The assumption is all older people have weaker immune systems, or most do. Maybe not all, but most do, just because you're older.
It's living a healthy lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
That includes appropriate diets, appropriate food, appropriate exercise.
We just want a pill, though. I just want a magic pill.
Everyone wants a pill.
Want a magic pill, and yes, I'll eat better tomorrow, doctor, but give me the magic pill to get through. So for the moment, I guess what's scary about this is, one, it's unknown. Two, we don't have a natural immunity in our systems to fight this. It normally isn't affecting humans, it's animals. And three, until we go through a season of this, we really don't know, does it burn itself out? SARS, the earlier version, disappeared. Will this come back again or mutate into some other strange, even deadlier version or different version?
All these unknowns.
Next year, was this every flu season? Will it continue? Presidents talked about, like most flus, why do most flus disappear over the summer when it gets warmer? You don't seem to get flu in the summer. You get it in the winter when it's colder.
Definitely. And we are praying that is the case, mm-hmm, for this virus as well. We don't know this virus well enough to say if it's going to disappear or, mm-hmm, not, or in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
But if it behaves somewhat like the flu, or
don't start coughing on me here. I'm going to have to kick you out.
I know.
Here, right?
This is why we're doing this virtually, right?
That's right.
We're doing this virtually. I can cough now and
sneeze
and not worry about this, right? So, yeah, we hope that the summer will take care of this. We don't know if it will. We got a few months to find out.
Right. So your fear, like most physicians, is it's the coming month here. If we don't flatten this curve out, if one person infects four or five, and those five infect four or five, it starts to look like a hockey stick. The rate of infection zooms way up. And it isn't just the danger that some of those are going to get sick or maybe die. That's part of it. It's the fact that a significant percentage, maybe as high as 1 out of 10, are going to need to go into a hospital and get ventilated to make it through this. They're going to turn into pneumonia, and they're going to need more help. And we just don't have that many hospital beds or ventilators to
That's
accommodate
right.
that.
That's right. That is my concern.
So wouldn't it help, and I'm not trying to be political, but I guess I will be a little bit here. It seems like the response we need more than anything right now, not just figuring out hospital beds and ventilators, but getting a handle on how many cases we really got. We've only tested, what, a couple thousand people?
A few thousand, and that is quite frustrating to me. Because if you don't test, how do you know who to isolate?
Yeah. Or how fast it's spreading, or where it's spreading, or whatnot.
That's right.
And so why is it so difficult to get test kits out? Isn't this just a swab? Can't they mail everybody a test kit and we mail it in?
Well, they're trying to produce as fast as they can right now. But we got a slow start.
Yeah, right.
Very slow start.
And what is the test involved? Do they literally just swab you and get
yes,
some DNA?
Yeah, they look at the DNA. They look for it's a PCR, polymerase chain reaction type test. Because,
for example, I can now, I just went on Ancestry.com and all they did is send me a little kit and I swabbed me inside of my mouth and sent it back to them. They tested my DNA.
Korea has drive-through testing for coronavirus.
Yeah, right. Why aren't we, I don't get why we're not coming up with innovative, quick, easy solutions. Why you got to go to a doctor and then they've got to recommend you go somewhere. And it used to be just through, they had to send it to the CDC. Now they're opening it up to LabCorp and some other places. But, you know, all of this is slow, and it doesn't seem like it's that difficult to do. Lab space?
LabCorp. They're sending out the ability test kits and the ability to allow LabCorp and Quest to be able to do this testing now, which is really good.
Because they're all over the country.
All over the country. So the sooner we can implement this, the better.
But, I mean, is my idea too silly? I've never heard anybody say it. Couldn't we just do drive-through things at CVS? Couldn't we just mail every American a little kit and send it in?
Your idea is not silly at all, because it's already being done in other countries.
Yeah, right. I just don't get it. Well, call everybody up, your congresspeople, and say, get me a kit, because we got to know where we're at and what's happening. All right, final thoughts as we wrap this up here in our extended version today here of OC Spotlight. What are you telling your patients?
I'm telling my patients that if they do not need to be out of their home, you're most safe at home.
Stay home. And if you do have to go out, what? Don't shake hands.
That's right.
Do we need to put masks on and all that kind of stuff?
If you're healthy, I'm not worried. If you're sick, you'd need a mask on. If you're taking care of sick people, you need a mask on.
Should we not go see grandma and grandpa because we've got a chance of infecting them? Should we not go visit them in the nursing home because it incubates there more?
Make sure grandma and grandpa stay safe. Make sure they got water, they got food, they got... I don't get why people are buying all the water and toilet paper out of Costco, because you can actually drink water from your sink. It's safe. Well, I can't say it's 100% safe, but we've been drinking it for years.
Yeah, right. And toilet paper, I think we're just afraid we're going to get isolated and run out of toilet paper at home. We're not worried about running out of food at home, but we're running out of toilet paper.
Well, we want clean butts during the apocalypse. That's my theory. That's it.
When God comes to take us all home, we gotta have a clean butt here, right?
That's right.
Well, I thank you for cleaning up some of the mess surrounding this and giving us some hope and assurance. I think what people are looking for is reality. And again, I guess I'll get a little political here. The messages have been dramatically mixed coming out of Washington and elsewhere. No big deal. It's just the flu. Don't worry about it. Half of Americans are going to get this and it's deadly. That's the confusion. That's the chaos. That's the questioning. And when people don't know, they panic, right?
Right.
If we know, then we know we can deal with it. So stay home, stay clear, stay clean. And stay close to OC Talk Radio. We're going to come back and do some more things. Dr. Trin has agreed to do a show with us coming up. We're going to give a plug for that Health Talks with Dr. Trin, Thursdays at 9 a.m. 8 a.m. And we're going to have the ability to call in. So that'll start in April. Mark your calendars. Thursdays, 8 a.m. You're going to have a source where you can call for questions, not just about coronavirus, but as we get through this, you talk about a lot of things, from cannabis to cancer. I mean, you talk about right. all sorts of things these days. So we'll look forward to starting that conversation as well. Thank you so much for coming in. How do people, if anybody wants to reach you, are you reachable? Any questions or way to people can contact you? I know I don't want to flood you with questions, but if they want to email you or something?
If they're on Facebook.
Oh, there you go.
They can go. I have several sites. Mm-hmm. One is called the Healthy Brain Club.
Oh, there
on
you go.
Facebook.
Okay.
The second site is called the Longevity Institute.
Oh, boy, I like the sound of that. And we all want longevity. And a lot of times you're just known as Dr. Iggy rather than Dr. I don't know where Iggy comes from. I guess it's your son or
my son's nickname.
Your son's nickname.
On Facebook, I took that name.
So Dr. Iggy, you can look him up too.
Right.
Dr. Trin, T-R-I-N-H. Thank you for coming in, sir. And we look forward to talking to you more starting in April every week. We're gonna pick your brains here, and you're going to help us walk through this crisis.
God bless.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to another example of OC Spotlight right here on the Orange County's only community radio station, OCTalkRadio.net.